are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Trey, and I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina, and you can keep up with all my work. You can ask me a question. You can submit a question for our weekly mailbag. If you could tell me about your dinner, whatever you want to talk about, I'm there. And I'm usually online, and I usually respond to you guys. So, you know, keep those cards and letters and phone calls coming. And I apologize, folks, this week. I know I was a little offline, a little off schedule. As I think I mentioned earlier in the week, I had been dealing with a head cold. That is gone, thank God. So now we're going to get back on track. We're going to really amp up the draft coverage leading up to the NFL draft in April. So with that, I have on the line with me a very special friend of mine. He does a fantastic job for the NFL Draft Bible, NFL Draft Scout. He's got a new draft guide out that you absolutely have to check out. It's chock full of information. His name is Rick Serratella. And Rick, thanks so much for coming on the program with me.
Oh, Patty, always a pleasure. And now we're less than a month away from the draft, so we're locked on the draft here. I'm excited about it.
I bet you got to be thriving this time of year. This is your time.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's been a incredible season of reflection, right? Because, you know, we just, like you said, put out the draft guide, and I appreciate you mentioning that. Just the past 11 months, we've traveled the country, and we've gone to the media days, we've gone to the games, we've gone to the all-star circuit, we've gone to the combine and the pro days, which I know we'll talk about later on. So hey, it's that time of year. The teams are locking in their boards and resetting their draft boards and moving and grooving, but it's exciting times for sure.
For sure. And, you know, speaking of draft boards, Rick, let's start off with your draft board, your big board. You know, obviously, you know, like you said, you've gone to some of the pro days, you've been to the combine, you know, you've done your film work. Are there guys that have risen on your board and guys who have dropped, and who are some of those guys? And just basically, how has the landscape changed from, say, a month ago when we were just getting ready to start the combine?
Well, I think the smokescreen season is always interesting, right? Because you can't believe everything you hear this time of year, but sometimes when there's smoke, there's fire. And, you know, I know you and I were talking off the grid a little bit about Josh Rosen possibly being traded, and you heard that at the combine, and now you're hearing it more here, and, you know, you're kind of seeing these Cliff Kingsbury interviews, you know, with Josh Rosen is our starting quarterback now. So I'm trying to read the tea leaves on the wall here, and it sounds more and more like, you know, Josh Rosen is going to get shipped out of town at some point, whether it's before the draft or draft weekend. And it sounds like, you know, Kyler Murray, I'd actually be surprised if he wasn't the first pick in the draft now. So it sounds like it's signed, sealed, and delivered. You know, I know Ed Oliver this week worked out and had a exceptional pro day. And, you know, people are saying, hey, he's back in the top 10. I don't know. He's never left my top 10. I've got him locked in solid as our number three prospect. And I think, you know, the media, you know, kind of soured on him a little bit just because I feel like, you know, there's no true position for him. Is he a defensive tackle at 287 pounds? Does he drop 10 pounds and move to the edge? We saw the Tennessee Titans asked him, you know, to play outside linebacker. So, I mean, we've seen that with Mario Williams, 275-pound outside linebacker. So I don't know where Ed Oliver plays at the next level, but I know he's a dynamic player. He's a game changer, and a great coach is going to find a way to utilize his talents.
Rick, you know, you mentioned defense, and I still say, and I've been saying this all along, that the Giants pick at number six is going to be a defensive player. I think it's probably going to be an edge rusher, or at the very least an interior passer. Who amongst that group, besides, you know, Oliver, do you think has kind of snuck up there? You know, guy maybe who was maybe flying under the radar a little bit and has since snuck up to you know, top 10 consideration, a guy who you think might be a fit for the Giants?
I think Brian Burns checks off all the boxes out of Florida State. You know, you could state a case for him to stick his hand in the dirt. He could probably stand up and play outside in a 34. But one thing I do know, he can get to the quarterback, and he's an exceptional talent as well. And you know, this defensive line class is really historic. My 18th year covering the draft, I've never seen a defensive line class like this one. And Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy and a couple of those other guys about a decade ago was close to. But I think this one takes the cake. And you know, listen, guys like Bosa and Ed Oliver and even Josh Allen are probably going to come off the board before the Giants get there. But guys like Brian Burns, guys like Rashawn Gary, we talked about Ed Oliver not having a true position. You know, debates going inside the war room as we speak. Rashawn Gary, what's his true position at the next level? And I think he could play an edge role at the next level. So, you know, those are the guys that I would probably be looking at. Now, Montez Sweat is a guy who I thought kind of solidified his top 10 stock with his Senior Bowl performance and then his track time at the, you know, it was like a track meet at the combine this year. I think he ran a 4.440 at 260 pounds, which is incredible. But then you heard about, you know, the heart condition, similar to what Maurice Mohurst had a couple years ago and caused him to slide. So I think Montez Sweat now becomes the X factor. Like, hey, how much risk reward are we putting, you know, how much emphasis are we putting into this heart condition? And obviously the NFL teams have more information than we do. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes 6 to the Giants. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes 36 in the second round, because we saw Mohurst slide a couple years ago because of that.
And, you know, the Giants, you know, they made that big blockbuster trade. They moved Odell Beckham Jr. They got an extra first round pick at number 17 overall. When you're drafting kind of in that 15 to 20 range, Rick, I mean, at that point, are you looking more along the lines of, you know, marginal first round talent to second round talent? Or do you feel that this is a deep enough class to where the Giants can really come away with two solid studs in that first round if they were to exercise both picks?
No, I think, you know, anytime you're picking in the first round, you want to kind of target and identify a starter, right? And I think even that's even true to a second round pick. I think, you know, not every draft class is as deep, but even in the second round picks, you should be targeting potential starters. And I think, you know, you'll be able to find a guy. Now, the interesting thing, again, we talked offline a little bit about this, are the Giants in or are they out on a quarterback? Because if they're out, well then, hey, they're going to be clapping every time a team ahead of them selects a quarterback, you know, one of these talented defensive linemen or one of these other talented players that they have a high first round grade is now going to slide back to them in the second part of the first round. So if they're out on a quarterback, hey, you know, you might get an offensive lineman like a Jonah Williams who slides or a Jawan Taylor who slides. I don't know. Maybe the Andre Dillard kid slides. I mean, those three tackles can come off the board in any order. And, you know, if you talk about three or four quarterbacks now being selected before the Giants come back on the clock at 17, well, hey, there's going to be an immediate impact type of player available for them. And it really becomes, you know, it sounds like Gettleman is a big firm believer of drafting the best available talent. So I think it becomes, you know, where talent meets need. And again, DeAndre Baker at corner, a guy who didn't perform well at the combine, he may be available there at 17. And I think that could fit a need. Again, once considered a top 10 pick, doesn't test well. Maybe he's a value at 17. We saw Derwin James, the kid from Iowa, the corner a couple years ago, what the Chargers were able to do with guys sliding in the secondary. So maybe that's an option. But I think there's going to definitely be opportunity for two legitimate starters here in the first round. The Giants need it. They need the depth. They've got too many holes to fill. But again, will they be in or will they be out at quarterback? I think we're still trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would be surprised if it's a quarterback at six. You know, and even though it makes sense to me to trade for Josh Rosen if he goes on the block, the next question I was going to actually ask you is, you know, it's probably going to take at least a third rounder, if not higher, to get Rosen. And the Giants, basically, their third rounder is like towards the bottom of the third round. So you can make the argument it's a third round slash fourth rounder. So if you're Gettleman and you have this opportunity to get Rosen, excuse me, and it costs you just either one of your firsts or your second, do you do it, or do you say, you know, look, we've got other holes that are more pressing we've got to fill. Let's, you know, we're committed to Eli for this year. Let's worry about what we've got to fill first, and then we'll revisit the quarterback situation.
Well, the way I see, I mean, I'm hearing too, I saw a report that the Cardinals now actually have a second round offer on the table for Rosen. So I'm thinking now it's going to take at least a second round pick to get it done. With that being said, if I were to put Josh Rosen in this year's draft class, I can state a case that maybe he's the top signal caller in the draft. Now, you know, obviously he had his struggles last year with Arizona. I think there was a lot of factors in that equation. So, you know, we do have that now to gauge. But just coming out of college, based on the UCLA film, I would think that Rosen would be number one on some teams' board. So if you're telling me that, hey, you know, Rosen, if I'm picking at 17 and Haskins and Murray are off the board, I'm looking for a future quarterback, and I can use a second-round pick on Rosen rather than a first-round pick on Daniel Jones of Duke or Drew Locke of Missouri, I would kind of lean towards giving up a second-round pick and using, you know, again, that second-round pick towards a potential starter, because now, hey, if I've got two first-round picks and – you know, I use my second round pick now to shore up another need, and I have a potential developmental quarterback, you know, with the second round pick. Hey, you know, I could state a case that that might be the way to go. Again, we don't know what the Giants' logic or thinking is. I know we heard some things, or you heard some things, about maybe Rosen's personality not meshing exactly with the current Giants regime. So, you know, there's a lot of factors, a lot of X factors, a lot of thought that's going to go into the process. But I have no problem, you know, with a guy, a first round quarterback, just 1 year body of work. It's too soon to label him a bust. So why not, you know, invest a second round pick? You're getting a guy who went in the first round, and hey, you know, they're not always going to work out. Davis Webb didn't work out. Kyle Lauletta remains to be seen. But again, the Bill Walsh philosophy, keep drafting quarterbacks because you could just never have enough good players at that position. The more good quarterbacks you have, the more equity you have.
Indeed, indeed. You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina, special guest Rick Serratella of NFL Draft Scout, NFL Draft Bible. We're going to take a short break, come back, and we're going to hear from Rick on some of the pro days that he's visited. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Rick Serratella of NFL Draft Scout, NFL Draft Bible, and we are talking draft. We're getting close, folks. Pretty soon we'll have the answers to all our questions. I'm sure there will be people out there that will be thrilled with what the Giants do, and there will be people out there that will be skeptical. I mean, that's what this time of year is all about. And Rick, you know, I know you mentioned at the top of the program you've been hitting up some of the pro days around the country. Tell us about some of the pro days you've been at, and, you know, maybe some guys that maybe weren't initially on your radar that kind of popped out at you, and guys that we should maybe looking at and where they might fall into the picture.
Sure. I mean, you know, we've got guys on location to various pro days across the country, like you said. And, you know, I've had a chance to kind of, you know, I usually, you know, hit the East Coast pretty well, based here in New Jersey. So, you know, some of the pro days I've been to personally, the Temples, the Rutgers, the Boston Colleges, in terms of Power Five conference schools. I mean, you know, the one thing here is the Darian Thompson experiment didn't exactly work out well. And so maybe there's some depth needed at safety. I can tell you right here on the East Coast, the Northeast especially, there's some good-looking safety prospects. And Delvin Randall from Temple was not a combine invite. But, you know, the Giants had a safety from Temple last year in Camp Chandler, who I think spent some time on the practice squad now. The scouts I talked to feel like Randall might actually be a better prospect. So he's a guy now not invited to the combine, potential day three selection. If not, he's going to be in somebody's camp as an undrafted free agent competing for a roster spot. So definitely a name worth monitoring. And I think Saquon Hampton from Rutgers, you know, the only Rutgers combine invite, I believe, or Blesson Austin was there, but he's had a medical. Now, Hampton, I thought the positional work that he showed at Rutgers, the ability to flip the hips, the back pedal, just the change of direction of capability, I think Saquon Hampton might be pushing top 100. Now, I don't know if he goes on day two, but I think he'll be an early day three selection at the latest. And I had a chance to go to his games. You know, Rutgers, I go to a handful of games every year. His leadership, his knowledge of the playbook, his ability to put teammates in the right, you know, the right location. You see him kind of doing the pre-snap reads and making sure his players are aligned correctly. He's a true leader of the defense. And, you know, with Landon Collins now out of the picture, you know, maybe a guy like Saquon Hampton is on the Giants' radar. And I'll give you one more safety, Will Harris from Boston College. I had a chance to speak with him at the Senior Bowl. Highly intelligent player. Really enjoyed talking to him because the knowledge, you can tell he's just a film rat. But then also he tested well. He has great size. He comes in over 6 feet, 6 foot one, I think 212. And just a great size, speed, smart combination. So safety, a position worth looking into, and I was impressed with my safeties. Now, Matt Dennis, you know, some of these later round and undrafted guys, Matt Dennis from the University of Penn, I had a chance to go to their pro day, which was after the Temple pro day, and ironically, the Patriots and Giants were the only two teams who showed up. The Giants saw enough from this offensive lineman, Dennis, out of Penn to invite him to the local pro day. So he's invited to the Giants local day. He's a name worth monitoring, probably a priority free agent. But as you know, Patty, we need some offensive line help for the big blue. So just a name to store in the back of the memory bank. And, you know, we had a representation at North Texas who's got a pair of cornerbacks there. Keep a lookout for Nate Brooks and Keemon Hall. They are a dynamic duo there for the Mean Green down at North Texas. And I know Giants fans and your listeners are very educated fans, Patty. So a lot of times the mainstream media wants to talk about the first round guys. I think people really want to know who are some of these day three guys? Who are some of these names we should be on a lookout for? Well, North Texas has a pair of cornerbacks definitely heavily on the NFL radar. In fact, they were both at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl when I was out at Pasadena. That's where I first heard about them. And there was a little bit of buzz there amongst the scouts. And I'll give you another little tidbit, you know, talking to one of the Giants scouts at the NFLPA. Remember this name, Olabisi Johnson, the wide receiver from Colorado State. A lot of people talk about his counterpart, Preston Williams, but Olabisi Johnson really impressed the Giants, from my understanding. He met with just about every team out there at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. So just a few names there, you know, whether they're late round or undrafted, on the Giants' radar. And again, I want to just make sure people realize the undrafted free agent process, which begins pretty much in the fourth or fifth round, when day three starts, there's personnel dedicated to you know, vetting those undrafted free agent contracts immediately following the draft. And there, you know, a third of every team is consisted of undrafted free agents. There's more undrafted free agents than day three picks currently in the NFL. So this is a big part of the draft process, and these are some names you definitely need to know.
Yeah, these th see this is the type of the type of nuggets that really, I think people really like to hear about, because we all hear about the big names. We hear about, the guys that make Radio Row and do all this stuff, but it's these little guys that you don't hear of that actually turn out to make, the core of a team. Rick, in terms of, you mentioned offensive linemen, and I just want to get your take on this. The Giants flirted with Mike Remmers in free agency. They did not sign him, but Remmers, to my understanding, has not signed anywhere. I believe he's coming off a back surgery. If they do sign him, how much do you think that affects the direction they might pursue? Or do they just say, you know what, we're sticking with our board regardless?
I think that, in my opinion, viewing the quote unquote restructuring of that offensive line last year, my understanding that was a career high sacks that Eli Manning endured. So to me, it was a big swing and a miss. So I don't think any one guy is shoring up the issues on this offensive line. Now, you mentioned the back issue. That's really scary for me, because back issues and back injuries, it's hard to detect. You can't detect those. You got to go based off what the player is saying, how he's feeling. But those things can reoccur at a drop of a dime, and then all of a sudden, hey, you're down a body. So for me, first off, the Nate Solder signing, as you saw last year, I think building a team through free agency is the worst way, especially when you're building from the inside out and you want to rebuild your offense and defensive lines. The worst way to do it is in free agency, because you're always going to have to overpay, especially when it comes to offensive line. And that's the biggest way to get hurt, because now you're in a hole with this Nate Solder contract. He didn't play up to the salary, and now you're on the hook for that. So for me, I'd rather build through the draft. I'd rather find a guy. Chad Wheeler wasn't outstanding, but he was an undrafted guy, and he doesn't cost a lot. And I'm not so sure how much of an upgrade Remmers is going to be, where I have to pay him a veteran salary. And I think that's why you're seeing more and more of these younger players. The average NFL career is down to 2.5 years now, because hey, I can go get a cheaper option. I can go get a day three guy that maybe is comparable to a Remmers. So for me, I'm always looking towards the draft, to build towards the draft. And then hey, there's going to be some of these veteran guys that teams are hesitant or reluctant to sign, that hey, when August rolls around or September rolls around, hey, maybe we bring in a veteran guy if we're unhappy with what we did in the draft. But for me, and that this is a whole topic for a different show, Patricia. I would really like to see the NFL implement a system where we do the draft first and then free agency, because I think that's truly how you build a team, is through the draft. And I think free agency should be secondary. And I think, I'm not sure about this, I think the NBA does that model. I'm not positive, but I would like to see the NFL be constructed that way, because hey, free agency to me is like, hey, let me fill in the holes that we didn't address in the draft. I think the system is a little bit backwards the way it's currently constructed. So a little long-winded there, so hopefully I answered the question.
Actually, I agree with you, Rick, and I've said this quite a number of times before. I don't understand why they do free agency first and then the draft. It just makes no sense,
No
because
sense.
I agree with you. You end up overspending on a guy, and let's face it, everybody gets overspent because it becomes a matter of supply and
Sure.
demand. And to me, it makes more sense to just draft what you got. Draft for your needs, and then what you don't get in the draft because you don't have enough picks or, whatever the circumstances might be. Now you fill in via free agency, but I guess it's, the NFL wanting to take care of the veterans. I mean, who knows? It's hard to say. But
Right.
anyway, moving on. If we could, I'd like to stay on the offensive line a little bit more,
Sure.
because I've been told that it's a very deep class for tackles. I've been told it's actually a deep class for interior guys.
Yes.
Guys that you think would be a really solid day two value for the Giants? Either position, guard, tackle. I personally think they need, you know, some more tackle depth because they didn't have it. Who are some names to watch for at those spots?
No, absolutely. I mean, listen, I think the Giants need help across the line, across the board. So we mentioned the obvious names that can come off the board in the first round, but you've got day two value guys, guys like a Dalton Risner from Kansas State. I mean, he played offensive tackle at Kansas State, but then you saw him at the Senior Bowl. He played a little bit of guard. Some scouts view him as a center. I can tell you this, he's a nasty dude in the trenches, as is Chris Lindstrom from Boston College, who, you know, you remember Chris Snee from Boston College, and Chris Lindstrom is not too far off. And I don't see people talking about him in the first round, but I'll tell you what, when we look back at this draft 20 years from now, if you tell me Chris Lindstrom is a top 10 talent, I wouldn't argue with you. He's that good. But, you know, teams don't value guards as high, so he could be on the board day two. Titus Howard from Alabama State. We saw a kid from the Texans, Julian Davenport, out of Bucknell go in the fourth round and get thrown, you know, thrusted into that starting left tackle role. Titus Howard from Alabama State, another small school product, who I think is a little bit more advanced than a Julian Davenport and could come in and compete, and maybe he would be a great fit at right tackle for the Giants. Bobby Evans out of Oklahoma, that Oklahoma offensive line, you know, winning that big Joe Moore award for the best offensive line in the country. Well, Bobby Evans was a big part of that. And, you know, while he's a little bit raw and doesn't have the polish to be a round one guy, Bobby Evans is a guy who could develop into a potential starter. So I think, you know, maybe late round two, early day three, Martez Ivy out of Florida. Love this guy. Longest arms in the draft, longest wingspan. Played some tackle at Florida. Teams are viewing him as a guard. But again, you know, hey, if I'm taking him on day two, I'm going to give him every opportunity to compete at that right tackle job. If it doesn't work out, hey, we can slide him inside. And then Eric McCoy at center, everybody wants to talk about Garrett Bradbury out of NC State, who I believe will be the first center off the board. And then you have Elton Jenkins out of Mississippi State, who I believe is actually one of the safest players in this year's draft. Maybe not as a high of ceiling as a Garrett Bradbury, but I think Elton Jenkins is an immediate plug and play center where you know what you're getting. And he's a safe pick. He's not going to be an all-pro, but he's going to be a rock-solid, steady starter. And then Eric McCoy, the junior out of Texas A&M, I think this is another day-two interior guy with starter characteristics. I mean, this guy's traits are through the roof. The scouts I've spoken to speak very highly of him, and a few of them actually believe he might be the best center. So you're right, there's actually tremendous depth in this year's draft on the offensive line.
And Rick, if you're the Giants and you're looking, you know, you're putting your board together and you're looking at what your needs are and you're looking at the depth at each position, what's the one spot that maybe has you a little concerned because, you know, maybe it's not as deep as the others?
Well, luckily for the Giants, it's the running back position. And they clearly don't need a running back, right? So I would not invest a first-round pick on any running back in this year's draft class. I just don't see it. So I think that because of that, you may see a Josh Jacobs sneak into round one, but now the Eagles traded for Jordan Howard, and I felt like the Eagles were a potential landing spot for a running back in round one. So I'm not sure if a running back does slide into round one, but because of that, I think all those other guys kind of get pushed back. So there's going to be some solid running backs available on day three. I just don't think that's the area of need for the Giants. But, you know, looking at this year's draft class, I think there's pretty good depth. Maybe the inside linebacker position is a little thin because after the two Devins, which is Devin White from LSU and Devin Bush from Michigan, I do feel like there's a significant drop off. And the kid Mac Wilson from Alabama, he's an intriguing guy. Maybe he goes round one, but probably top of round two. He could be a potential target for the Giants. He's got the prototypical size, obviously the Alabama pedigree, and again, just stuck on the depth chart for several years there, so doesn't have like a whole ton of experience. But I think he's a guy where Mac Wilson could potentially have a better NFL career than a collegiate career. But you talk about those three guys at the middle linebacker, I think then there's a drop off. There's another guy, Cole Holcomb from North Carolina, who I know the Giants are hot to trot for. And, he could maybe fit into the day three equation. But I think defensively, interior linebacker, offensively, running back, I think is thin. And then, in terms of depth, I mean, we talked about the defensive line is stacked. So is the tight end position. I know the Giants don't need a tight end either. But if they're looking for a backup, well, hey, there's going to be plenty of depth at the tight end position available on day three.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they, if they go for a tight end. I mean, I thought maybe at the beginning of the year they might redo or maybe even lop off Red Ellison, who right now is the highest paid tight end on the roster, considering he's, mostly a blocker. And then I know people ask me, well, will the Giants trade Evan Engram? And I think with them having moved on from Odell, I don't believe that's going to be in the cards for them this year, especially after how Engram, came on as strongly as he did. Rick, let's take a final break. When we come back, we'll wrap up. We'll let you talk a little bit about the draft Bible. So folks, stay with us. There's more to come. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina, special guest Rick Saratella. He's a tremendous individual, does a great job over at NFL Draft Scout, does a great job with NFL Draft Bible, has his new scouting reports out. He'll tell you about that at the end of the program. And we've just been talking draft, and it's that time of year, and look, we could probably do this all day, right, Rick?
Oh, no doubt about it.
All right, Rick, let's jump back to the defensive side of the ball, because I know I get a lot of listeners say to me, hey, Pat, you don't really talk much about the defensive side of the ball. I know we did a little bit at the beginning of the program, but can we talk a little bit about the cornerback and the off-ball linebackers? Because those are two positions that I could see the Giants potentially dipping into the talent pool there. What is the depth like at those spots, and who are some names you think might be a fit for them?
I really like the cornerback position a lot. And, I don't think cornerback comes into play at number six. So Greedy Williams, Byron Murphy, I think those are the two consensus corners in this year's draft. They'll probably be off the board at 17. But a guy like Julian Love from Notre Dame, who's just, fast, he's physical, has a great body of work on film, he could sneak into the first round. DeAndre Baker, we mentioned earlier in the show, didn't test well, but I tend to believe he could potentially still be in play for the first round. And then you get to day two, where you got guys like Trayvon Mullen out of Clemson, 6'1.5", 4.46 type of speed, five-star recruit at a high school, just kind of checks off all the boxes. Jawan Williams, if you're looking for a big-bodied corner, 6'3.5" out of Vanderbilt, ran a 4.64 at the combine, but got it down into the low to mid 4.5 range at his pro day. And then, we mentioned the pro day circuit. I happen to be at the Temple pro day, where Rock Ya-Sin, the Presbyterian transfer, Presbyterian shuts down their football program. Rock Ya-Sin transfers to Temple, becomes this immediate impact of type of player. And wow, I mean, I was just really impressed with his pro day workout and even his combine and Senior Bowl. He just checked off the boxes across the board. Kendall Sheffield from Ohio State is a guy that's going to be intriguing because a lot of people felt like he would run the fastest 40-yard dash in Indianapolis. Now, he suffered an injury and didn't get an opportunity to do that. But I'm understanding that he's going to have an individual workout in April prior to the draft. So he's a guy that could kind of maybe recoup some of his draft stock. And then we've been talking, you know, mainstream Power 5 schools. How about this kid, Corey Ballantyne out of Washburn? You watch the film. He's just the playmaker. He's creating fumbles. He's recovering fumbles. He has a bunch of interceptions. Sticky man-to-man coverage guy. And Jimmy Moreland, non-combine invite, James Madison. I was at the Shrine Game. I was at the Senior Bowl. I asked the players, who's the toughest guy you went up against? Jimmy Moreland out of James Madison is a guy that constantly came up. They call it the little big man syndrome because he's only about 5'10". But he was really one of the most impressive cornerbacks throughout the week of practice at both the East-West Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl. So, I love the depth at cornerback. I think there's a lot of potential there on day two, day three, especially developmental guys. And then, you know, you mentioned the off-ball linebackers and, you know, maybe not as much depth. But when you talk about guys that fit the Giants scheme, I'm looking at a guy – like a Taki Taki from BYU, Sione Taki Taki, who, if you watched his bowl game, he was just all over the place. I think he had like 20-something tackles, just a tackling machine. Did so well at the Shrine Game that he got the call up to the Senior Bowl, so he's a guy on the rise. Ben Burr-Kirvin out of Washington. There were some questions about his athleticism. I think he led the country in tackles this past year for the Huskies. He tested through the roof. I think he's a solid day two selection now. Cameron Smith out of USC is probably in that day three range, but just love his smarts, love his instincts. You know, ran into some injury issues the last year or two. So I don't know how that's going to impact his draft stock again, probably day three because of it, but a guy that's just a gamer, as is the Wisconsin linebackers. You know, they've got a handful of them. Van Ginkle, they got Ryan Connolly, Andrew Van Ginkle, but the best of the bunch is TJ Edwards out of Wisconsin. And again, 4.85 at the combine probably hurt his draft stock significantly. But when you talk about guys on day three that are going to outperform day two and day one selections, that's TJ Edwards. Maybe he does go day two. But again, he's going to outperform some of the guys who go on day one. So I love what he brings to the table. Gary Johnson from Texas, again, outstanding combine workout, a JUCO transfer. So maybe, you know, teams had to circle back and kind of do their homework on him after the combine. I love this film. I think he's an intriguing player. And then it's going to be interesting because – you know, there was a lot of hype around the Clemson linebackers, Trey Lamar and Kendall Joseph. Both of these guys ran in the 5 range. I mean, 5.0 something, which is, you know, quite frankly, a death sentence for a linebacker. So it'll be interesting to see if the Clemson players even get drafted now. So I would tell you this, you know, those top 2-3 guys we talked about are clear cut. And then you got a handful of guys that are going to go in day two. But when I take a look at my linebacker off-ball rankings, from 10 to 40, I mean, those guys are so evenly grouped. If I were to give that list of players to 30 different scouts, I'd probably get 30 different responses in terms of how they're ranked. It's that evenly graded at the linebacker position.
Wow, so many names. I don't know how you do it. How are you keeping up with all this stuff? Goodness.
Well, you know, somebody's got to do it, right?
Well, you know what? Speaking of which, why don't you tell everybody about that fantastic publication that you just released? I mean, my goodness, you could tell you put a lot of work into that.
Yeah, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in that. And again, it just goes back to the process and the one thing that we've tried to do to kind of separate ourselves from other draft guides out there is, you know, get to know the player. What's in between the ears? What's inside the middle of his chest there? Because you can never gauge a player's heart, and you can never really fully gauge a personality or their smarts and intelligence. And again, just making the travels. I mean, we're literally on location across the nation trying to get to meet with as many players and coaches and you know, pro liaisons and janitors and equipment managers and you know, as much information as we can compile on these guys. So I think it's a valuable resource. We kind of conduct ourselves like an actual NFL scouting department where, you know, we have scouts covering different regions of the country. And, you know, the Draft Bible is a fruition of our labor and kind of a consensus here. Hey, are there guys that I kind of like personally, you know, more than others? But hey, sometimes I get outvoted by the committee because we have so many smart individuals on the scouting trails all year long. And, you know, it's really, it's been nice to bring it back because the last time I did a publication was back in 2010. So almost a decade has passed by since I've done a publication. And I really truly believe that this is the best one I've done yet. And it's, you know, again, over 400 scouting reports, over 100 interviews. And what's cool about it is it's an industry resource. All 32 NFL teams use it. We have the agent representation listed for every single player. So, you know, not just fans are using this as a tool, but actual NFL teams are utilizing it. Hopefully, you know, when the NFL Network and ESPN cut to those war room shots, maybe we'll get a glimpse of that Draft Bible cover in the war rooms. But, you know, just appreciate you having me on to be able to talk about that. And hey, it's a relief. It's off of our plate. But now we turn the page of 2020. We're already cranking away and getting started on that process.
Well, why not tell folks where they can find this amazing work of yours?
Absolutely. NFLDraftScout.com. We partnered up with them this year. So up there on the menu bar, you'll see a link for the 2019 NFL Draft Guide. As soon as you purchase it, it's available, immediate download, directly into your inbox. So, hey, again, we appreciate everybody who supported us through the years. My 18th season covering the draft somehow managed to stay relevant throughout all the years, Patricia. So we appreciate everybody who supported us and everybody who's finding out about us for the first time. Buckle up. It's a double chin strap kind of draft guide.
And it's a very good one. I started looking through it, and I'm sitting there going, wow, you know, I mean, because I get my hands on several draft guides, and you know, there's, you know, Pro Football Focus has a good one with the analytics and stuff like that. But I like the interviews. I like the little extra information that you put into yours, and you could just tell it's a labor of love. And plus, you know, knowing you and seeing how you were running around like crazy at the combine, I said if he's doing that, he's chasing down these guys at pro days and, you know, probably mm-hmm. games and all that stuff. But you could tell it really comes through in your work, and it's just a tremendous product, and congratulations on pulling it all together.
No, thank you so much. It means a lot coming from you, and you're someone I respect a whole heck of a lot in this business, and especially working in the New York media, as you know, it's not easy, and respect everybody's grind and hustle, and hey, we're all in this together. We're all trying to make sense of the draft process, and it's something that hasn't been tackled yet. And you know what? We're gonna continue to try to tackle it. It might never happen, but that's the beauty of the draft, the beauty of the process. And like they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and that couldn't be more truer than when it comes to the NFL draft.
Amen to that. Well, folks, on that note, I want to thank Rick Serratella for coming on the program. And Rick, you know, we'll see if we can get you on maybe after the draft just to kind of break things down if you're, you know, up for it.
That would be great. Let's
All
book
right.
it.
Cool. All right, folks, thank you so much again for your patience this week while I got through the head cold. Thank you for listening. As always, a lot more draft content you're coming away. For Rick Serratella, this is Patricia Traina signing off. We'll talk to you soon.